Hello and welcome to another episode of Desert Island Tricks. So today we've got a very interesting guest. You'll work out why very quickly. If you haven't already seen the title, I'm not sure how I'm going to title these yet. But let's just give you a rundown on the format of today's episode. The idea is that our guests are marooned on a island. It's not real. We're not going to really do it to them. And when they're on there, they're allowed to take 8 tricks, 1 book and 1 non-magic item that they use for magic with them. For the particulars, they have whatever audience they want. There may not be any people on there. The idea is that they are the tricks that they could not live without. And that's the whole thing, really. So let's get on with today's episode. Today's guest is the best, most incredible, fantastic, unbelievable performance, magician, and magic business owner. It's also in my contract that he writes his own intro. He is the founder of the best magic company in the world. Some would even call him the grandfather of modern mentalism. He is, of course, Mr. Peter Nardi. Hello, Pete.
I'm very well. I just want to point out it's only you that calls me the grandfather of modern mentalism. And that was, I think, because years ago I was on the cover of the Magic Circular Magic magazine, and the title was The Godfather of Magic, and you decided to change it to the grandfather. So I just want to point that out.
And it's stuck, though. It's stuck.
Well, as the years go on, it's getting more.
So it's going to be really interesting. I don't want to use the word age in a derogatory way, but it's true. You've been around magic for so long. The wealth of tricks and products that you've come across in your lifetime will probably trump most people. So it's going to be interesting trying to get down to 8 tricks.
Do you know what? It's so difficult. Mm-hmm. So difficult, because even looking at my list now, and my mind is already changing some of these items.
But that's what Harry did. Harry changed midway through.
Yeah. But I'm going to stick with what I've got. But there would be a lot more.
There would be a lot more.
There would be a lot more. And all for different reasons. It's a really good exercise to actually, because one of the items on here, and in the intro you say it's something you can't live without. One of the items on here, I haven't actually performed for, well, a couple of the items I haven't performed for many years, but they were really strong effects for me at the time, and I'll explain more about that later. So they're not necessarily things I can't live without, because I haven't done them for a long time, but I think they deserve to be in there, because they're great tricks, and they are things that, you know, when you get that feeling, we go, why did I stop doing that? They're those type of effects. Mm-hmm. One of them I know why I stopped doing it, which I'll explain.
Oh, interesting. So let's take a trip to your desert island now. What is your first trick?
Right. I don't think this will come as any surprise to anyone. And I will say, I did try to avoid Alakazam branded products. The first one has to be the assassin, the stealth assassin, without a shadow of a doubt. That is something that I honestly think I couldn't live without. It's for anyone that doesn't know the assassin, many, many years ago, around about, must have been 23 years ago, because it was just after Harry was born, I released a product called the Mind Spy. Now, the Mind Spy was a peak wallet. It was quite a large peak wallet. But it did the job very well. And at the time, there weren't really any modern style peak wallets on the market. The Mind Spy was the thing that ignited everyone bringing out peak wallets. Because we bought the Mind Spy out, people went crazy for it, magicians, mentalists, and it was something I used all the time. Now, the difference with the Mind Spy and the Assassin, the primary difference is size. I was getting really known for doing these great mind-reading effects, but I couldn't do them when I was out casually, because the wallet didn't look right in if I was at the pub with friends or whatever. It was just a big wallet. It looked great on stage or in my jacket pocket, but if you're out casually, it just stuck out like a sore thumb. but the whole peak I came up with for the Mind Spy, I still truly love today, and I am bringing out a Mind Spy 2, which is slightly smaller. But from the Mind Spy, a few years later, the Assassin was born. And that was a smaller wallet, and it did a little bit more than the Mind Spy, but it was designed to be a 20-minute mind-reading act in my pocket. Now, one of the effects that I was really known for, and a lot of people believe it's my effect, even though I correct them all the time, was an effect called Hollywood or Bust, which wasn't my effect. It was a good friend of mine, Colin Miller. Colin is one of the guys behind Heirloom as well. Very, very clever magician, great mentalist, great performer, and great creator. And I remember him coming to my house, and this was just when I had the prototype of the Mind Spy. And I showed him it. I'd done some mind reading on him, and that's when he showed me Hollywood or Bust. And he said, look, you know, please be free to use it. Now, I honestly believe I performed it a lot more than Colin ever did, because I performed it for years. And when you look at Colin's routine and look at my presentation, there's quite big differences in it, because I worked it for so long and changed things. And as with any effect, you hit a wall where you make mistakes, or you know, things don't go the way they're planned. So the effect gets tweaked and turned and changed a little bit, but it is Colin's effect. Now, I don't perform Hollywood or Bust anymore, purely because I don't really know the latest celebrities. And so if I was to perform it, it would be on people of a certain age, probably my age, you know, rather than younger people. But that's my first choice, the Assassin. It's a, you know, it's a 20-minute act in my pocket. I could, if I went to a desert island and I had an assassin on me, I could most probably entertain a group of people for 20 minutes or so just with that in my pocket.
It's also, I reckon there's quite a few people listening who have had that at some point.
Yeah, I still think it's most probably the best peak wallet that's ever been made.
I think,
or not the best peak wallet, the best selling peak wallet that's ever been made.
That's what I was going to say. I can think of only one other magic wallet, but it's not a peak wallet, JOL.
Yeah.
I think those are the two probably biggest wallets ever in existence.
Yeah. And the thing is, as well, I have a lot of people, you know, saying, oh, can I do cards or wallet with the Assassin? It was never designed for that. Yes, you can do one, but it was never designed for that. And it is going to be clunky for that. You know, I've always been a great believer is, you know, you use the right tool for the right job. And the Assassin was designed to be a mentalism act in your pocket, and that's what it does beautifully. So that would have to be my first trick.
Good choice. Effect number two.
The second thing I would take with me is the Mirage coin set by Craig Petty. And I'll tell you for why. I've never been a coin guy. When I was out performing close-up magic and doing the weddings and the restaurants and things like that, I used to perform a coin unique effect. I performed Coins Across, my take on David Roth's version, and I would perform Hopping Halves. And I had no intention of learning any other coin tricks. That was it for me. I've never been a big coin guy. And a couple of years ago, speaking to Craig Petty, and he was saying, you know, what product would you love for Alakazam? And I said, I would love a coin trick. We don't really have a unique coin trick. And he said, well, why don't we relook at my Mirage coin set? I had never seen it at that point. I had heard of it, and I remember being at a convention many years ago in Kentucky when Craig was there, and that they had launched the first version of the Mirage set. And I remember everyone talking about it, but I never really knew it, and coins didn't interest me, so it wasn't something like that. But he sent me the original video. I watched it. And I really liked it. But in my mind, I thought, I'll never be able to do this stuff. I just, I haven't got enough interest to learn it. I love the effect, but I'm not going to spend all my time learning that, you know. But then when we filmed it, and I was editing the – when we filmed it in Houdini's. We filmed every trick live with lay punters as well. And when we filmed it, I was just watching it going, wow, this stuff's great. It's really, really good. And when I was editing it and watching the explanations – because I own a magic shop, because we go to convention, because I have to them, I have to learn to do at least the basics with this set. And there was one trick that I truly loved on there, which was called the Reverse International Matrix. And when I was editing it, I just thought, I can do this. It's so easy. And that was the moment, I mean, you've been to my house, that was the moment I brought down a close-up table from upstairs, stuck it in my front room, and while I was editing the video, I kept getting up. When it was rendering, I would get up and run through the routine. And the Mirage coin set has changed my opinion in coin magic and has made me love coin magic. And the great thing is, if I went up to Craig Petty behind a stand and he did the reverse matrix, I would pay him the money for that set if he convinced me I could do it. And believe you me, it is so easy, but it's such a beautifully constructed routine. It's very magical. It doesn't look like you're doing sleight of hand, but if someone is thinking it's all sleight of hand, which they will do, you're going to look like a master of sleight of hand with no work. It's such, and that's just one trick from the project. In fact, I was so excited about it, I started inventing my own tricks to do with the Mirage coin set. So I filmed the bonus video that's on there. So the Mirage coin set has to be on there because that really changed my love for coin magic.
A lot of the tricks that come to you, you only buy because you like them or you want to learn them or you love the trick anyway.
Yeah.
So it's no real different than if you are a consumer in a weird roundabout way. It's just that you buy the rights for them instead.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's it. I only ever purchase the rights to an effect if I love the effect. And anyone that's sent us in effects in the past will realise we mostly turn down four times as many as we accept. And I would say 90% of the routines that we release, there will be some of me in that routine because I look at the prop. So whether I've tweaked the prop, whether I've changed the presentation or enhanced the presentation or done something to it. So I am invested in every, not only financially, but I'm artistically invested in every product we bring out.
So let's go on to number three.
Right. Okay. So number three is the horizontal. Oh, no. No, it's not. That's number four.
Oh, that was a spoiler for coming up, though.
So number three would have to be Imagine by myself and Harry.
Which was on Harry's.
Was it?
It was on Harry's, yeah.
Right. Yeah. Number three would have to be Imagine. And the reason why it's on there is I love the mental photography deck. I've loved it for years. I think you've got to be very hard pushed at the time to find more magic in a gimmick deck than a mental photography deck. Now, owning a magic shop means we are performing constantly when customers come in. And the great thing is a lot of the customers that come in are lay people, especially now that Harry's doing a lot more social media, we're getting a lot more lay people in. Now, I know when I demonstrate a mental photography, you see their jaws hit the floor. It's so magical. And I heard someone say, I'm trying to think who it was. I think it was someone that worked for Murphy's. I think it was Patrick at Murphy's once said that the strongest magic you'll ever see as a layperson is your first visit to a magic shop. That's it. The strong, because you're going to see mental photography. You're going to see dynamic coins. You're going to see a Svengali deck. You think of those three things. Think about when you got into magic. They are super strong, and you're seeing these great bits of magic. So for me, mental photography was always great. I've got a great little pitch for it to sell them to you know, customers. And I would say I can't remember a time that I've demonstrated it and I haven't walked out with one without that. And that's not me. That's the deck. That's the trick. You know, start off blank, print cards, turn them blank again. So magical. But a few years ago, quite a few years ago, mostly about 8-9 years ago, I was working on a new idea for the mental photography, because I wanted to get more out of this trick. Rather than just blank, print, blank, I wanted to get a bit more out of it. And I came up with this idea about having a sort of rainbow deck. So the original concept of it and presentation was about this deck being my card collection, my deck collection. So as I would cut the deck, this would be another deck in my collection. So that was the original presentation. And like a lot of the stuff that I come up with, it got put on a back burner and I totally forgot about it. And that's, you know, that's not surprising with me. I usually forget what I got up to last week. But that got put on the back burner. Now, during lockdown, everything sort of changed for Alakazam. The structure of the business changed. I started working from home more and concentrating on product development. And it was at that point that I started looking at some of the stuff that I had created in the past, like Zoltar's opener. And I thought that gives me ample time to actually have a bit of time to work on my own stuff, because I'm usually working on other people's releases, not my own. And I remember finding the notes on this deck and speaking to Harry about it. And Harry come up with a great few ideas for it as well. And also big shout out to Liam Montier, who I showed him the prototype of it. And it was his idea to have the markings on them as well, which once again elevates the trick as well. So big shout out to Liam. But you've now got all the magic and power of a mental photography, but in a more filled out routine. You know, now, if you wanted to, you wouldn't have to start blank. And I know when me and Harry are performing it, we don't start blank. We start with the cards printed, and the blank bit at the end is a serious kicker. But you wouldn't even have to make them go blank at the end. You could just use it as a mind reading deck if you wanted to. And it's, but something that's so easy to do, you'll be hard pushed to find an effect that holds so much visual magic in it. You know, so yeah, Imagine has to be in there, and I love it. I love performing Imagine.
Yeah, when me and Harry were talking about it, we said that it's it's mental magic as well, isn't it? So it's it's like a whole little act in one deck of cards.
Really. Yeah, it really is, and it's one of those things that you could actually perform as serious mentalism, because you could use pseudo-gnosis as part of the presentation, why they're seeing the back. And that's what we do, is we sort of say, I want you to use your imagination. I want you to imagine that you're seeing a green back, or you're seeing a this, that, and the other. So you're using a bit of a pseudo-hypnosis type plot to it. Or you could use it as just a fun magic piece. Either way you go with it, it's a very, very strong effect that takes no work.
That leads us on to your halfway point with tricks, and this is number 4.
Right, so I've written too many down here then. So my fourth one will be the horizontal card rise.
Nice.
Which I think is a beautiful effect.
Mm-hmm.
I believe it's based on Milton's Aces, and I've been a lover of it for many, many years. And it was one of those tricks, and this has happened to me a few times being a magic shop owner. Collector's Workshop bought out a version of it. And anyone that knows Collector's Workshop, their quality of their material is very, very good. The routines are very strong. The problem is it's a small company, and they build a lot of the stuff in-house. And when I spoke to George Robinson, who owns it, he said he's got like a rota. So he'll know in January that's his time to make horizontal card rises, and he'll make, let's say, 50 of them. Now, if those 50 sell out in 2 weeks, it's most probably not on the rota again till next January, because he's got all this other stuff to make. And I remember being lucky enough to, I think I bought in maybe 6 or 12 of these units, put them on the website. I kept one for myself, put it on the website. 5 of them sold out in a couple of hours. I was in the shop on a Saturday, had some people in. I demonstrated it in the shop just to show it. And someone said, oh, could I buy that one? And I said, oh, that's my one. And I go on, let me, I really want it. I've got a gig coming up. I'd love to do it. And then my mind sort of said, let him have it, and then you can get yourself another one. So I sold it to him, went to order some more. George Robinson and Viking had sold out. And this has happened to me so many times with products, so I miss out on it. And the real kick was he'd done his gig and then he sold it. And that... That no really way. Wound me up, because it was something that I'd been after for so long.
No
now, maybe it was meant to be, because a few years later, they bought out a remote version, which I now own. And I think when I first got it, I think I showed you it over Zoom.
No, it was in your kitchen.
Oh, was it in my kitchen?
It was in your kitchen, yeah.
Now, I'm not sure if it was you or someone else. Maybe it wasn't. I don't think it was you. But someone thought that that was a TV screen on the – no, it was someone I showed, because when I got it, I was so excited. And I remember – I think I showed it to – called Dean Levy on the phone, John Carey, and performed it to all of it. It's such a magical plot. For anyone that doesn't know what it is, you get 3 cards selected. They're put into like a little, they call them a hulette, like a little card holder. And then it's covered with a dome. So if you imagine you're looking at the deck head on. Now, what you do is you cover that glass dome with a hanky. And when you remove it, the first selection is now on the front of the deck. So instead of rising up vertically, it's actually pushed its way through the deck horizontally. Then you do it with the second card. You cover it up, uncover it, and the second card's there. And then for the third card, you take the deck, you basically wrap elastic bands around it, so there's no way you could manipulate anything. Cover it with the dome, put the hanky over it, take it off, and now the third selection is on the face. I just think it's a beautiful piece of magic. I've written a lovely story for it, got a nice bit of music for it. And that is something that I think there's certain tricks that I look at and I feel, oh, this feels like real magic. And this is one of them. I've always loved watching it performed, and I love the prop. And I'm so glad that I sold my one. So now I've got the remote one.
Hey guys, sorry to interrupt, but I just wanted to let you know about all the exciting things happening here at Alakazam Magic. We have brand new releases every single month and live streams every Tuesday, so there's so much content to dive into. We ship every single day. If you're in the UK and your order goes to over £40, we ship it to you for free. If you're international and your order amounts to over £70, we ship it for free, fully tracked. And if you live in the United States, we get it sent from our California branch, which means you have cheaper shipping, faster shipping, and no import duties. Can't get any better than that. Honestly, there's so much to discover here at Alakazam, including the monthly newsletter with all orders. We have our own live academy where the world's biggest names in magic teach the best tricks in the world. And it's live, so you can interact and ask any questions you like. We have so many exciting things happening here at Alakazam, so make sure you follow us on all social media, Facebook and Instagram, to find out the latest news. Cheers, guys, and enjoy the rest of the podcast.
So we're over the halfway mark. That means that we are on to your 5th item.
So the 5th one, I don't think will come as any surprise to anyone that's been following Alakazam for a while, is the extractor.
Good choice.
Yeah. The Extractor is, I've said the story before a few times. I'll run through it quickly. Many years ago, we were working on an effect by Mark Elsden called the Riser deck, which we released, and it was an ending to an ambitious card routine. Really, really good gimmick. And I sent the gimmick off to Rob Bromley so he could manufacture them. Now, while he was manufacturing them, he sent me this box and he said, have a look at this. So I had a look at it. I thought, yeah, that's all right. And I put it in my close-up case. And that was it. And it sat in my close-up case, or not even my close-up case, it was in my dem case for about 3.5 years. And I was at the Blackpool Convention and behind the stand, and there's a magician, very good magician, called Dave Jones. He's known for cards, coins, just a proper old schooler, does everything really well. And he come up and he said, show me something I haven't seen before. Show me something that's going to fool me. So I looked in my case and I saw this extractor. I'd never used it, never thought about any routines with it. But I thought, do you know what? I'm just going to have a bit of a laugh, right? And I didn't expect this to fool him. In my mind, I thought, I'm going to build this trick up so much, and then at the end, it's going to be rubbish, right? That's what I thought, and that's what I was aiming for. You know, that's what I was aiming for. So basically, I handed him a deck of cards and I said, look, take the cards out of the box and have a look through the cards. Make sure you're happy it's a normal deck. So he had a look through and he said, yeah. Now, bearing in mind, I'm making this all up on the spot because I thought to myself, I've got to make it sound amazing for the payoff of it being rubbish to have as much impact as it can have. So he said, yeah, I'm happy with the deck. I said, right, I want you to shuffle the deck for me. So he shuffled the deck. I said, now, I want you to take a card out. You can do that one or two ways, Dave. You can either think of a card now, run through that deck and find it, or you can take one out at random. It's entirely up to you. Now, I tell you what, Dave, every time I do this to a magician, they think the cards are marked. This trick's so impossible that you're going to swear those cards are marked because there's no other way it can happen. So I'm really building this up because I thought the payoff was going to be rubbish, right? So I said, I'm not even going to look. So he took a card out and I said, are you happy with that card? My back's still turned. He said, yes. So I hand the box to him and I say, put the rest of the cards in there. They're not important. So he puts the cards back in the box. I now hand him a Sharpie and I say, write your name across the face of that card, big and bold. So he writes his name on it. I now put the deck box round my back, sort of reach, I'm miming to Jamie, but I'm reaching behind me like this, and I said, push your cards somewhere in that box, in amongst the other cards, not at the top, not at the bottom, somewhere in the middle. So he does that, right? I now turn around, I close the box, I put the box in my inside jacket pocket, and I said, I just want you to concentrate on your card. Now, bearing in mind, I wasn't looking, but you chose a black card, right? And at this point, I saw that look in his face where he thought, what's happening here, right? So I said, it was a club. He went, yeah. And I said, 7 of clubs. And I could see in his face, he had no idea what had happened, right? And I said, now you put the 7 of clubs somewhere in that deck. If I could tell you exactly where it was, would you be impressed? And he said, yeah. Thinking I'm going to say it's at number 32. Now, bearing in mind, I put the box in my inside jacket pocket. I said, I can tell you exactly where it is. And I point to my right-hand trouser pocket. I say, your card's in there. Now, he didn't know what to do at this point. I showed my hand empty, reached into my pocket, bring out his signed card. His reaction to that routine was, I mean, he had no idea, absolutely no idea what had happened. And it was at that moment I thought, there's something very, very powerful here with the extractor. Now, that weekend at Blackpool, I picked every magician I thought would catch me out, every magician, and I showed it to them. So we are talking about David Stone, Angelo Carbone, Paul Gordon, Dave Jones, literally anyone that I come across, Mark Spellman. I just wanted to show them, because I wanted to say, see whether I hit lucky or whether this thing was really falling. And it just fried everyone. And it's a utility item that psychologically allows you to get away with murder. Not literally.
Depends how it's being used. Yeah. And correct me if I'm wrong, isn't there a poster that Harry's got?
Yes, there's a poster that David Blaine sent me, actually, that basically says the extractor is a thing of pure genius. You know, congratulations and everything. And we actually made David some in his own brand of cards. Now, the extractor, like I said, is a utility. So you can use it for numerous effects. And on the videos that come with it, I've got card in position in sealed deck and everything else. And it's just killer. Yeah, so the extractor had to be in there.
Very good choice. So let's go for number six.
Okay, number six. So this is more to what people will associate me with, I suppose, and that will be fourth dimension telepathy.
Nice.
In particular, Bob Cassidy's version. And I'm a big fan of Bob Cassidy. I've met Bob a few times, had breakfast with him, had dinner with him. He was a big fan of both the Mind Spy and the Assassin. I met him in Las Vegas, actually, when the first time I went out there to Mindvention with Mark Spellman, and we had a good chat. Now, I've always been a fan of Bob Cassidy. I remember the first time I saw his DVD, which Mir Yedid released. I watched it, and I thought, if you could really read minds, that's how you would do it. With Bob Cassidy, there's no fancy boxes. There's no dancing girls. There's, you know, it's just raw. It's really raw mentalism. And I remember when we were out for dinner, we were sort of chatting about it. And he said to me, a lot of the places that he used to work were like biker bars. He said, so you can't get in there and start doing all this flamboyant stuff. He said, you've just got to be direct, quite rough as well. And he had that about him where he really just looked like he was doing mind reading, you know? So I'm a big fan of Cassidy's. I love all his effects. I love all his thinking. Chronologue, his diary effect, I performed for many years when I was out performing. But fourth dimension telepathy, I think, is just, and I know it's not his routine, but his take on it, I think, is really good, very well thought out, and just a super strong piece of mentalism. And if anyone can get hold of the Bob Cassidy DVD, get it. There's only about four or five tricks on there.
I think you can get it downloaded now.
I think so. Yeah, if you go to Mir Yedid's site, I think he mostly sells it as a download. And it's, yeah, it's such a great DVD. And to watch Bob perform is brilliant, and it's very direct, very to the point. Not a huge amount of presentation, if I'm honest. He's just pretty direct with it, but it's still entertaining.
Mm-hmm. You know? He teaches it, I think it's in his first book, and it's also in his Penguin lecture as well.
Yeah.
So I think there are loads of different places you can learn it.
Yeah, yeah. I learned it off the DVD, I believe. I'm going back a long time now, so it would have been on a VHS, but I
on rock.
It. Yeah.
Carved
yeah.
on little stick man figures.
Yeah, there we go. so, yes, that would be my, fifth thing?
That was sixth.
Right.
That was your sixth. So now you're on to number seven.
Right. So number seven, and this is another one that I don't actually perform anymore. And it is The Predator Wallet by R. Paul Wilson.
See, this is one that I said earlier I've not heard of.
When I explain the routine, I think you'll know what it is. Okay. There's certainly been versions of it since, but The Predator Wallet. So this takes me back to a time in magic I really love, and it was the old international conventions and things like that. Coming up to Christmas, you know, you would go down to London, and the international conventions, when, if you think about it, you're still a young pup. But when
that,
I was,
didn't feel like that, trust me.
When I was getting back into magic in my early 20s, so we're now talking like 30 years ago, right? You had video, didn't have DVD, you had video, but you didn't have YouTube, you didn't have the internet, you didn't have any of this. So when you went to a convention and saw Michael Amar, it was like you were seeing a movie star. Do you know what I mean? You wouldn't meet them nowadays because of the internet. I think you already feel you know the person because you see them so much. It's like, you know, even I'm not trying to put us up with Michael Amar or anything, but even when people ring the shop, it's people that I haven't spoke to before, but they speak to me as a mate because they've just watched 3 or 4 tutorials I've been on. They've been, oh, I'll watch your live every week. So it's very easy to feel you know someone now. But back then, you didn't. You would go to these conventions, you would see these people, and you would walk around in awe of them. And it was one night at the international convention, I was sitting at a bar with Paul Wilson, and he demonstrated the Predator on me. So the routine, as soon as I tell you, you're going to know exactly what it is. So he said, do you mind if I have a little bet with you? Well, I'm going to try and read your mind, actually, but if I get it wrong, you'll win a bit of money. So I said, yeah, all right. So he said, think of a playing card. I've got $1 that says I know the suit of your playing card. I've got another dollar that says I know the value, another dollar that says I know whatever it is. And then he ends up getting the card wrong. But then when you say that and he turns over the banknotes, it's actually written on there 7 of clubs or whatever it is. And at the time, now bearing in mind this has got to be 30 odd years ago, I said to him, oh, that's great. How much is it? And I think he had two. It had just come out. You couldn't really buy it anywhere apart from him. And that's only if you bumped into him at a convention. He didn't have a dealer stand or anything. And he sold me one. And I think I paid for it, if I'm not mistaken, 280 quid. Now, 30 years ago, 280 quid, that's the most I'd ever spent on a magic trick. I didn't tell Jenny that. I told her it was like 30 quid or something. The great thing about the wallet was it was brown, snakeskin, and it was so narrow that you couldn't even fit a credit card in the credit card slots. So it was, the trick was great, and I'm really sorry, Paul, but the wallet was awful. I mean, it literally, you had credit card slots, but the cards wouldn't
so
fit.
So he's
in.
On here next week. So.
Right, yeah. But the trick was brilliant. And I'd done that for many, many years. And I remember doing it on Graham Jolly, who's once again one of my favorite mentalists of all time. And he came in the shop and I did the trick on him. But every step of the trick where I tell him his suit and everything else, I got right. So he was like, doubly, he didn't know where to go with it. That was great. But I did it so often that I could do the effect without looking. It was like muscle memory. And then I just stopped doing it for some reason. And I think being a magician, I think certain things just get, we feel they're a bit old. We've done them so long and we forget how powerful they are. So that's something I'm sure I've still got it at home or a version of it. I changed wallets. But that is something I'm going to relook at because it was such a strong routine.
Mm-hmm. Very good. I think that's not going to be one that we'll get many of. I think that's quite a unique one as well, which is good. So that brings us on to your final one, your number 8.
Oh, well, I've got another 3. But I'll talk about the final one. The final one has to be eye change or instant interchange.
Mm-hmm. I remember getting this when I was quite young.
Yeah, it's been out a long time.
Mm-hmm.
But it's one of those tricks. It took me about 20 years to create. So years ago, when I was getting back into magic, I used to record every bit of magic that was on telly. And, you know, I was consumed by it. And I remember seeing a magician on TV and he performed an interchange routine. That's the first time I'd ever seen that style of routine. You know, four cards in your pocket, four in your hand, they change places. And I recorded it and I kept watching it back and watching it back and trying to work out how he did it. You know, only for my own benefit. I weren't going to go out and perform his routine, but I just wanted to know how this thing was being done. And I worked out what I believed he was doing, and I learned it, and it was great, but it was really slight heavy. I mean, there was palms into your pocket, palms out of your pocket, switching packs and this, that, and the other. But it was great, you know, and I really loved it, and I always loved the plot. But I did think to myself, there's got to be an easier way to achieve this. There's got to be an easier way. And it was one of those projects that I would work on for a bit, get so far, then it would end up on the shelf for 4 or 5 years till I thought about it again and my knowledge was a bit better and maybe there was a new gimmick out that I think, I could maybe use that in here. And it was one of those projects I kept coming back to. And around about 10 years ago, 12 years ago, I was here on a Saturday. I remember the day perfectly. I was here on a Saturday with Chris Harding. Chris was working with me at the time. And we were talking about the interchange. And at that moment, this vision of a gimmick came into my mind. Very simple gimmick, but it came into my mind. And I said it to Chris, and Chris said, I'll go and make some now. So he got the guillotine out, and he made these cards. Now, bearing in mind, the routine's only apparently 8 cards. I mean, the gimmicks he made looked like I was holding 52 cards in my hand, you know. But they were only to see if the routine worked. And the beauty was that not only did the routine work, but because of the structure of the routine, everything made perfect sense. There was added moments in there which I weren't expecting, like the kickback. And the beauty of it was it left me clean at the end. Now, that was all to do with structure of the routine. And at that moment, I just thought, you know, this is it. I'm not going to get it any better than this. And that was iChange. And the reason it's on the list is because I think it's a powerful routine. I think it's very magical. And it took me so long to create, you know. And it's surprisingly easy to do, which is great.
Well, I was going to say, I remember when that came out, there was, like, for the year after, there was just a flurry of people coming up with routines like that.
Yeah.
It sort of started something in the community. Everyone started trying to create versions of it.
Yeah. And it's still a pretty underground product. You know, if I go to a convention and I demonstrate it, people will think it's a new product. They wouldn't have seen it before, you know. And one of the things was when we first released it, the trailer was me in a suit jacket. And then I think about 6 or 7 years later, me and Dave loosely were doing one of the weekly review shows or what, I can't remember which one it was we were doing. And he said, oh, why don't you do iChange? And I said, oh, I haven't got my jacket. I said, oh, so I'll do it in my jeans. So I performed it just out of my jeans pocket. And then suddenly the thing went viral. This thing, and it was just before Blackpool. So I remember people saying, is this going to be out for Blackpool? And I'm saying it's been out 8 years. But I think a lot of people, because in the trailer I was wearing a jacket, thought you had to wear a jacket for it. And as soon as I did it in jeans, they were going, oh, you know, this is actually really workable. It's a great trick. And I remember being at Magic Live and fooling Jeff McBride with it. And Jeff kept bringing people over and to see it. And that bit where the cards vanish from their hands is just a killer.
Yeah, I remember seeing the original trailer as well, and thinking, I've got no idea how it works.
Yeah.
It's a proper fooler of a routine.
And there's one move to achieve the whole thing. So, yeah, that will be my final product.
Good choices. So that's number 8. And that brings us on to the 2 hardest choices now, because you're only allowed one of each.
Yes.
So what did you go for your book?
Right. The book, books for me is a hard one, because I have never really been a book guy. Never really been. I've got quite a big collection of magic books, or a decent one, not big compared to, like, Andy at the shop. He'll get a new book, and I'll say, have you read the book? Oh, yeah, I've read it 4 times so far. Well, you've only had it 20 minutes. How'd you do it? I'm terrible, right? I'm terrible with a book. I've got books on my shelves that I've never read. But what I tend to buy a book because there's a routine I want to learn. I remember many years ago, that it was the first time I met Paul Gordon, actually. I was there as a dealer. I think he was there as a dealer. And I went up to his stand, and Paul does what he does. He, you know, demonstrated easy ace estimation. Oh, my God, I want to learn that. It's in that book. So I bought the book. Showed me another trick. I want to learn that. Oh, that's in another book. I bought that other book. But they were the only tricks I learned from that book. So for me, books are a hard one. Like you said, I've got a lot of books that I haven't even got round to opening. And for me, I do think that's my retirement sorted. You know, not selling them, but when I retire and have more time, I'm going to start going through these books. But usually for me, if I see an effect I like, I'll buy the book and I'll learn the effect. I might have a little scan through, but I'm not one of these guys who will sit there, read a book from cover to cover and everything else. So I'm not very well read when it comes to magic books. But one of the books that, and this was a very hard choice for me, because like I said, I've got different books for different reasons, but I do like a book that has a good mixture of stuff in it. So the one I chose would be The Magic Menu by Jim Sisti. The Magic Menu was an old magazine, and it was all about restaurant magic. So there was loads of routines in there, good commercial, solid routines that covered all sorts of genres of magic. So I would say that one, whether that truly is my book of choice, I don't know, because I don't think I've really got one, but it could be any of Bob Cassidy's stuff, any of Larry Becker's stuff. You know, it could literally be anything. But The Magic Menu is a good one, because I do enjoy something with variety. You know, if I got a book and it was all 4 Ace Productions, I'd get bored very. I only need one. Do you know what I mean? I don't need 600 of them. I need one. And that's where a book like The Magic Menu for me is good, because each thing you look at is going to be different, you know. So Magic Menu by Jim Sisti. There are various volumes, but I'll say volume 1, seeing as I was told I couldn't have the whole set. But that's, so that's my book.
Okay, good choice. And finally, arguably the most interesting one,
yeah,
because no one knows where this is going to go.
Yeah,
what is your non-magic related item?
Right. So you originally said to me a non-magic related item, then you changed that to a non-magic related item you can use in magic.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So they're 2 different things. My first one, when it was a non-magic related items, it would be my turntables. Right.
Okay, yeah.
But I can't really use them for magic.
You could do. You could use them in a routine.
No. So I can perform magic on them.
Oh,
hey. So I would say music.
Nice.
Music.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I, bit about my background, I was very much into music when I was a kid, when I was about 14. I left magic when I was about 12, I think, and then 13, 14, hip-hop become quite a big thing for me as a kid. And I got into sort of using turntables and stuff like that. And then I had a little recording studio, was doing stuff there, entered the World Mixing Championship and all this sort of stuff. So music's always been a big thing for me. And I think doing like the editing and everything I used to do in the studio on the music also helps me when I'm doing editing of trailers and things like that. It just helps you with that sort of stuff. So music's always been a pretty big part of my life. And I think music's got a power that a lot of other things don't have. I mean, I can literally listen to a track and it will take me back to a certain part of my childhood, like getting around on the horse and cart before cars were. I know what you're thinking, Jamie, and I thought I'd say it before you do. So that would be my non-magic item that you can use for magic. It's only recently I've started looking at adding music to a couple of my routines, and realistically now I don't perform that much, so it's for my own, you know, my own enjoyment.
Yeah, music really changes the feel of so much.
Yeah, it does. And I will say as well, the last, since lockdown as well, I ever fell out of love with magic, but I think the last couple of years I've actually been practicing and rehearsing magic for me, rather than I obviously still learn the effects that I have to demo at conventions, but that's all I used to do. Whereas now I am learning and rehearsing and practicing effects that I may never show anyone, but I'm doing it for my own enjoyment, you know, which is a great place to be. That's why I got into magic, you know, for my own enjoyment.
Well, thank you for taking us to your little desert island and giving us a little peek into
Very welcome.
Your little world. If our lovely guests want to find out more or go different places and find out more about you or about Alakazam, where should they be going?
They can go to alakazam.co.uk, and then they can also join us every Tuesday on our live show on Facebook and YouTube.
And they should follow you in all the places that they should. They should subscribe to your newsletter as well.
Yes, subscribe to our newsletter. Also on our website, I do write a blog almost every month covering different things.
Your newsletters have become highly sought after now.
They have, our physical ones.
Yeah,
they go out in every order every month. Yeah.
Nice.
While stocks last.
You have to grab them before they sell out.
Yeah, but that was great. It's been really good doing this with you. I really enjoyed it. There were a few tricks that I didn't get in that list that I should have got in that list.
Maybe we'll have to do like an honourable mentions episode or something.
Yeah, I think so.
At the end of it. So thank you all for listening as well. Keep an eye out on the next episode, which obviously will be coming next week. If you're enjoying it, make sure that you tell everyone about it as well. The more listeners we get, the better people we can get, the bigger the podcast will become. But until next time, we'll see you soon.
Hi, Peter Nardi here, and I really hope you enjoyed that podcast. I just wanted to make you know that Alakazam have their own app. You can download it from the App Store or the Google Play Store. By downloading the app, it will make your shopping experience even slicker at Alakazam. You'll also get exclusive in-app offers and in-app live streams. So go download it now, and we'll see you on the next podcast.